They weren't complaining that the police didn't do anything. They didn't really ask the police to do anything. But the police, the responsibility of the police officer is to take action when such things happen. And I'm not saying that the legal approach, giving people tickets, requiring them to come to court, is always the best approach. I think it's often rarely the best approach. But since it is the approach used against poor people, and it has the approach that's regularly used against homeless folks who are at City Hall. It happened, for example, at Sleep Out 92 nights ago when one woman was given a disturbing the peace or obstructing an officer ticket or some such thing and required to get arrested, actually, and taken to, I think she was taken to jail. I could be wrong about that. It could just be just a ticket, but it is a ticket. There's no indication that maybe he was this fellow who went into a tizzy after a pizza request was given any kind of citation. So I'm just wondering if this isn't another indication of class policing in Santa Cruz and sort of the legacy of the slave catcher history of the really police departments throughout the country. And the funding of the police that happened initially under the Clinton, that's Clinton, C-L-I-N-T-O-N, you know, but it's talking Bill Clinton, but with the support of Hillary Clinton in the 90s, the funding of all these police agencies so that they are now quite prepared to run out and pepper spray folks and break up demonstrations and massively uproot survival encampments such as they did at San Lorenzo Park in December of 2011 at the end of the Occupy movement without providing any kind of place for people to go, and do so regularly in cities throughout the country and in Santa Cruz when they harass and eject people from their survival encampments with no alternate facilities and with indifference and almost with a mechanical regularity. That kind of behavior makes me very sarcastic when I hear talk about how police officers are really people, as we heard from, for example, the departing Swami. Yeah, they are people. So are Nazis. They are also people. All these folks are people. And it's amazing what people can do when they're in a robotic militaristic formation and engaged in policies that direct them to go a certain way at the risk of losing their job or their livelihood. Does that mean we should stand back and say, oh, it's only their job? I don't think so.
So far, it's been pretty nice. I've spent a Thanksgiving here before. It's always treated me pretty good here. I like it.
Well, we'll just leave it there then. We've been talking with...
Anna.
Yeah, I'm Jesse. I'm with Tom J. Dad.
And I'm Robert. So, have a good night.
You too, man. I was in the library today, and this home bum was scared of my dog. And they told me my dog wasn't a service animal, and I gave them the service animal paperwork, and they still kicked me out of the library.
Who kicked you out? You know, was it a woman, a man?
It was a big fat man, and the security guard didn't really seem to care, but I guess the guy that was like in charge. But really, my dog was chill, and this home bum was just walking too close to her, and she started barking. And I took out the paperwork and said, my dog is a service animal. He said, your dog's not a service animal.
And I examined the paperwork or not?
He looked at it, but he didn't really, like, take it and hold it. And he's like, it doesn't matter.
He said it was a counterfeit material?
He didn't say. He just said, it's not a service animal. And I said, she obviously is a service animal. And that was kind of rude. But I wasn't really worried because I wasn't really doing anything anyways, so I just left.
And your first time in Santa Cruz, or you've been here for a while?
I've been here a couple different times.
What do you think of the town?
Oh, it's really cool. I like how it's kind of like, it's like close to the bay, but it's not all the crazy. So it's got some of like the attributes that the bay has, but not all of them. And it's prettier. So I like it.
And we've been talking with... Your name is?
Oh, my name is Patrick.
As you probably said before.
Right, I did.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Talking with
Jimmy Cuba and Gonzalez.
We're at the library. It's around about 12:30, and we're it's March 23rd. Go ahead.
Well, just a sense of it, like the brains that came through last Tuesday, okay? People were running about. And it seems like there's a new breed of recently hires or whatever we want to call it, because there was some compassion in the last groups that were hired. There was hand warmers being handed out. They would get socks to you, and they kind of, you know, the rains were coming down. Now it's like if a business owner or a homeowner tells the police to want them out, man, the police are on it, okay? And then, you know, if you don't move, you're going to be, you will move. That's it in a nutshell. It's hot down here. And whoever comes down here, they're rowdy, and they'll eat each other alive the same way they'll eat the cops alive. So it's like the Wild West down here. Maybe the third power. It's so lean down here. There's no meat on the bone that they take from each other in their sleep and in their waking hours 24/7.
You spend much time down here, Jim?
It's... For a positive thing, we're looking at promoting a new podcast, Santa Cruz Night and Day, from lovely Santa Cruz via Las Vegas, Nevada. So it's a little twist, okay? And I'll
pity the fool.
A lot of meat.
Hang in there.
That will keep the ears tuned in for days on end, you know. It's from the streets. It's like street team worthy. It's from the streets. It's what it's about. It's the trials and tribulations, man. This down here, this is real, okay? And we're not a big city. We're just a little hamlet that has berries and marijuana, you know. But people are really mean and evil, man. And they're one another, you know. And then the cops feed on it. It's just like an outdoor prison system.
And we've been talking with
James Michael Gonzalez, Jimmy Two Guns.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right.
Here at the library, I see two rangers in a ranger truck. Only one guy is sleeping on the bricks. It's a windy and sunny day here. Sleeping friend alone. And there's a couple more. Well, there's some packs of property carts.
And I think the presence, someone with an audio device or a camera who's walking around, tends to deter harassment by rangers, police, and security guards. It doesn't always happen. It sometimes can be provocative. So, for instance, yesterday as I came out of the Huff meeting, I observed Officer Bradley Burrell, who I had previously had some positive encounters with, giving a citation to a guy who was sitting on the sidewalk, and I wasn't sure what it was, and Burrell wasn't abusive, and the guy was sort of mellow about it, and he took the ticket and walked away. And I walked up to Burrell and I asked him, what'd you give him a ticket for? And he said, I don't have to tell you, and if you don't, you know, if you're not helpful for me, I can't be helpful with you. And I said, no, you are. This is a public record, and if you're not telling me, you're obstructing an attempt to get information that's a legitimate kind. Well, you can go make a Public Records Act request, he said, in essence. And I said, yeah, I can, but you can also tell me and save us all the trouble, save your staff the trouble. If you're not doing that and you're doing so because of some personal animus, then you're not serving the public and you're not really doing your job properly. And I said, and I don't want to have to make a complaint. He said, oh, go ahead, make complaints. You can make as many as you want. I've had complaints made against me before, something to that effect. And I said, okay. And I said, give me your card. And he said, oh, I don't have to give you my card. You know who I am. And while it's true, I'd spoken to him before. I didn't know who his sergeant was. I didn't know how to spell his name. Didn't know his badge number. Didn't have the contact information clearly with me. So he got into his car and with a smile he drove off. And the deal for me with Bradley Burrell, who actually I had some positive things to say about when he was a sergeant at arms at City Hall. He was directed by the city administrator to confiscate my recording device, which I had placed near the podium, as I always do, to record speakers at the city council meeting. And he walked up and said, if you leave it there, I'll have to take it. And I said, if you try to take it, I'll be holding on to it and you will have to arrest me. And there won't be, I'm a member of the media. I don't advise you to do that. I'm not disturbing the meeting, and you would be disturbing the meeting if you did that, even if you're directed to.
I'll also be covering the SEIU strike, where I made it to City Hall on the first day of their strike, interviewed a few folks, caught some of the chants, and I picked up some of the issues, not as much as I'd like, but perhaps there'll be time for more of that as the strike goes on. But then there's, of course, the Benchlands demolition that happened on the 11th. And I caught some of that and interviewed a few folks, mostly gathering names and contact information for people who might want to be part of future lawsuits or possibly just connection to speak up, speak out, and fight back against these kinds of sweeps without adequate shelter or housing that are being used contrary to the law and court decisions and violating people's, not just their personal rights, but destroying their survival gear and their property. And there's probably more than that, but join me and you'll hear some of it.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with the October 17th Monday protest in front of City Hall. A variety of interviews, well, brief snippets of interviews perhaps, some of them longer than others, are what we're going to get. And still don't know quite what the exact details of the particular concerns of the workers were, but you'll certainly hear me trying to ferret them out. And here we go. And I'm here at the City Hall. It's the 17th. And there's a line of folks in front of City Hall on, I guess it's Center Street. I'm counting at least 70 or 80 people here. Signs on strike. And, well, we are SEIU, unfair labor practice, strike. Invest in our community, SEIU. 5521. And you have a guy with the bullhorn, of course, who's leading chants. Honk for the union. People are wearing purple t-shirts. And Micah's crossing the street. Hey, Micah! Where's your sign?
Right.
Where's your sign?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear who I'm here with.
Yeah. So, Micah, what are the issues here? Have you been following in any detail why the contract was, what it was proposed, why it was rejected, why the bosses of the union accepted it, and then the membership refused?
I haven't really been following any of it. I know the workers have good cause to just straight up not trust the city.
you know, so they have an idea how much they should get paid. If there was a mutual trust and respect, then the city would say, sorry, we can't afford that, and they would think about it. But for very good reasons, they just don't trust what the heck the city is telling them, and so they're sticking with what they deserve.
Now, you were on the council for 4 years. Did you see similar strikes during that time, or was it pretty quiet?
It was similar. The SEIU threatened, but then they gave in. Or they didn't give in, but they negotiated for a much smaller amount than what they're asking for. And I think they're just getting tired of that. It's been years and years of, like, they threaten to go on strike, and the city says, sorry, we can't afford that, but we'll give you a little bit. And at this point, I think they just don't trust the city, and I think they have good reason not to.
Do you have any connections with union members that have given you any insight into this particular strike?
No, because I'm not that involved anyway, so I haven't tried to figure it out.
And why are you going to the Benchlands tomorrow to watch the next demolition?
I don't know. Probably not. Sorry.
Well, then I won't be seeing you there.
I just don't have the capacity for suffering that you do. You're amazing.
I don't know about suffering. Weariness. Hi, I'm with Free Radio. I'm wondering, what are the issues here as far as you're concerned?
You want to talk to someone with a neon vest on.
A neon vest. Yeah. But you have a sense of what the issues are yourself.
Yeah, it's an unfair labor practice strike.
Nothing has affected you personally? Or?
Yeah, you definitely want to talk to one of the people with the vest.
And I will. But I'm wondering, personally, did anything affect you that you remember?
You're going to have to talk to him.
No, you don't want to say. Yes. You don't want to say.
Sorry.
Thank you.
We are the union.
So, what are the issues that are important to you?
I'm sorry. You can talk to our president.
Well, you can, but you choose not to, right?
Yes.
Too bad.
Stand up! Fight back!
So what are the issues here primarily? I'm with Free Radio.
Let me find you the right person.
Yeah, we have a press correspondent that's happy to help you out. That work?
That's fine, okay. If you want. Yeah. I mean, I prefer to talk to ordinary people, but apparently they're gagged. You're not letting people talk.
No, we're trying to focus on what we're doing here. So.
Which is good.
What's your name, partner?
I'm Robert.
Robert, Neil. Nice to meet you.
How do you do, Neil? And it looks like there's more folks than I thought.
Folks.
Fred Keeley, old dog you. Who are you?
Victor. My name's Victor.
Hi, I'm Robert, as he's told you.
Yeah,
all right, well, I'll talk to you. Why not?
Well, is it just questions in general? Or?
Well, the first question is the most immediate one. There was a deal made, and apparently the union membership rejected it. What was the deal, and why was it rejected, and why was it proposed in the first place?
Well, you know, there's ongoing negotiations, and at the time, the bargaining team felt like it was a deal that the workers supported, but as a democratic union, you know, it went up for a vote, and the workers rejected it and decided to, you know, initiate their strike.
What was the original deal that supposedly was supported?
The deal was a 3-year contract. It included furlough protections, no furloughs throughout the duration of the contract. It also included a bonus of $1,100 and then 12% raises over 3 years. But ultimately, the membership voted and declined it because it is more than just wages that they're, you know.
Now, I noticed four things were mentioned by the often unreliable Sentinel. Any particular unfair labor practices that you've noticed that have concerned you?
There's multiple unfair labor practices that the union has filed around intimidation, around workers' rights in the workplace. And so
an example would be,
you know, workers being intimidated for holding up union signs, anti-union tactics more than anything.
And an example of a worker being intimidated would be what happened?
Asking workers to take down their signs when, you know, other signs are obviously able to stay up whenever. So
would that have been on the job or outside the job?
Yeah, currently on the job, and those are rights that every union worker has to, you know, participate in union activity.
Was there any diminution in anti-union activity after the complaint was filed with the labor board?
No, there's actually just been a growth in participation from union members, obviously. So more people are engaged, and it ultimately resulted in workers taking the ultimate action and withdrawing their labor.
How long has the strike been authorized for?
5 days. A 5-day strike, but that doesn't mean that the workers can't go on strike longer if they need to.
And is there another meeting planned to vote on whether the strike should be renewed or continued, or is this in the hands of the leadership?
No. It's in the hands of the union workers. If they vote to continue the strike, then the workers will strike, but there's also ongoing negotiations happening at this moment.
What is the process of voting that is allowed for the general union? How do you do a vote, for example?
Yeah, all active members have the ability to vote, and so there's whether it be at work sites or electronic votes are also a way that votes are conducted as well.
So it can be done remotely.
It can be done remotely and in person as well. So we've done a combination of both just to make sure that everybody has that opportunity to vote.
Now, was there a difference? What was the difference in differential, if you know, between the vote to initially accept the deal and then to reject it?
The members never accepted it, so it was more than 83% that rejected it, and that's more than enough to authorize the strike.
Are you part of the leadership yourself, or would you?
No, I'm part of the union staff.
And is there a insurgent movement in the union that is concerned that the tops have accepted a deal that the union membership didn't want?
Ultimately, the members are going to have the opportunity to vote, and so if they vote it down, then that's the direction we're going to take.
So currently, you think the process is sufficiently responsive to the membership?
Absolutely, and that's why we're out here today. That was reached, a tentative agreement, and the workers rejected it, and now we're here because at the will of the workers.
And I'm not entirely happy with these answers as I listen to the audio as it plays back, because he didn't really answer whether there was an insurgent movement in the union, and he didn't really answer I think he said there wasn't an initial vote. It's a little unclear because it's kind of hard to hear some of it. But I got to some extent that I was being sold something, though it may well have been quite true, and that it was sort of a line that is being put out. That is, say, a story that is being followed, perhaps accurate, perhaps not entirely accurate, perhaps not entirely responsive. But I continue to ask, and you get to hear the responses that I got.
Now, can you once more emphasize the main specific demands that the union is looking to resolve and try to be as particular as you can?
Workers are demanding equity. This city council has said that they committed to equity. We are demanding that the unfair labor practices be addressed.
Equity means what?
Equity when it comes to wages. Equity when it comes to safety on the job.
What would equity with wages mean?
It would mean meeting the standard of, having comparable wages to others around the area as well, too. Thank you.
So I guess that was Nick who's taking a pause.
Essential workers to be heard. I wanted to share real quick my friend Joe Thompson here from Starbucks Workers United. Joe, you want to give us a come on?
Starbucks has sent someone, apparently. He's not going to speak.
Represent. Woo!
Side by
union
side.
Is that history? Has this never been done before? And at this point, I'm standing next to a mayoral candidate, former state treasurer, former supervisor. He's held a number of positions. And as I've mentioned in, I guess, previous netcasts, Fred Keeley has also been, he was the facilitator, so to speak, for the CATCH committee, the city council's phony baloney group that essentially had people spinning their wheels for a year and then ignored their recommendations. But they fundamentally were not recommendations coming from a group of homeless folks. I think they had a couple of token homeless people on there. But they were essentially kind of window dressing to ignore the real need to set up transitional encampments and deal with unfair laws that criminalize homeless people, because the city council's objective has been to recriminalize people and reinstitute those oppressive laws like the sleeping ban, camping ordinances, blanket ban, that essentially have been thrown out by the courts. They have to try to find a way to reinstitute them. And Fred, I have to say, I did not see him working to fight against that at all. In fact, I thought he was facilitating it. So I wanted to get his opinion about what was going on, and I was sort of being jovial with him. He was being very frosty to me. He probably knew my position, and he was trying to hear the speakers, and so this is the only dialogue I had with him throughout this strike situation, that the 9 a.m. initiation of the strike that happened at Santa Cruz City Hall.
This is the first time the city workers in Santa Cruz have gone on strike.
You are running for it.
Why don't you listen?
And be in solidarity. Starbucks workers for the first in the state here in Santa Cruz to unionize, and we are standing with you now, and we will stand with you forever, because your fight is our fight. Now, when any worker is under attack, what do we do? When any worker is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up and fight back.
So, in other words, it seemed to me that Fred was ducking the questions I was asking him, you know, about essentially how he regarded the strike. And so I told him, well, I guess I'll wait to be ignored until after this is over, so you can ignore me more prominently and more audibly. I don't know. And that was kind of that with Fred. Although I did talk at length to the other mayoral candidate for the city mayor's position, the new one that's kind of a citywide mayor that's going to be chosen independently of the city council coming up in November, Joy Schindeldecker. But that was a bit later.
Now this movement is growing. Labor across the world is standing up and fighting back, because this is our time. It's our time to stand up. This is the year for labor to fight back!
All right! You're not cheering, Fred.
We went through an entire pandemic, and we're still going through it. We are the essential workers, and yet nothing is changing. Nothing is changing. There are greedy bosses who are still saying no. They're not giving their workers what they deserve. And what do they deserve? A contract. A good contract.
Yep.
We need to stand together, because all these fights are interrelated and connected. Every single worker struggle needs to be heard. It needs to be said loud and clear that when we stand together in solidarity, we are showing up every day for each other. Thank you all, and see some queens!
See if we can talk to him.
All right, y'all, we got a special guest that I would like to turn your attention to.
Can I get a couple of words for free radio about how the strike with Starbucks is going?
Yeah, of course.
What's your name, man?
My name is Joe Thompson. Yeah, Starbucks, it's going good. You know, we're starting bargaining on October 26th. We just want to tell Starbucks that we need to hold them accountable. That's what the union's going to do. It's going to show them that workers are standing together in solidarity.
The main concerns of the Starbucks union strikers are?
For the Starbucks, it's a lot of things. Mostly in Santa Cruz, it's public safety. You know, we want to make sure our baristas are coming in, they're feeling safe, and that we can, you know, have a decent workplace where we have living wages and making sure people can live here and work.
You are a barista yourself?
I was a barista back from this about 3 years. I stopped working there about a month ago. Uh-huh. But I'm still active in the union efforts.
And what kind of safety issues have come up in the last year that you're aware of?
We've had multiple threats of harassment, stalking, indecent exposure. It's very common here in Santa Cruz. And I know, you know, interviewing these people, that there's a lot of problems, and there's not a lot of city services that are helping support our homeless population.
Starbucks is one of the first organizations that opened up its bathrooms to non-customers. Is that an issue with union members?
We want to open our bathrooms, but right now they're closed because Starbucks isn't providing the resources that we need to keep them open.
When did that happen? When did they close down?
They closed early in March, I want to say, this year.
And was it because of a particular incident, because of a cutoff of resources?
It was mostly because it's what the baristas felt would make it safer. And then Starbucks said, okay, we're going to shut your bathrooms down and close the inside.
So it's unfortunately the case, and I didn't ask the question directly, but I got an answer anyway. Who caused the shutdown, which was the question I should have asked, but he answered it by saying it was the baristas who shut down the bathrooms because they felt unsafe. And I don't know, maybe this is one of these COVID-type answers expressing concerns about, I don't know, people who weren't wearing masks or people who being denied the access to showers were not the the fresh and clean. They had problems in cleanliness because they couldn't clean themselves. But indeed, you have to hold accountable people who are shutting down bathrooms, whether it's management or labor. I'm sorry. And I don't think it's a good thing that they did that. It was a great thing that the bathrooms were open and a bad thing that they were closed, although I'd like to know more specifics. In the middle, however, of this, I was more interested in the issues of the strike at that moment, and this is what continued.
Everyone, good
so it's a whole effort.
Thank you for attending.
How many members of Starbucks are here? Are you a lone supporter, or do you think there are others here, too?
I believe there's a few other people here as well. So just making sure that we always show up and stand with each other and fight together.
How can people support the Starbucks strike?
Making sure that you go to, you know, whenever you go to Starbucks, you order Union Strong, and that you, you know, you stand with the union, you stand with the workers.
Now, what does that mean when you say that?
Yeah, it just shows the workers that you're on their side. You know, it shows.
Are there any other more tangible way people can? I guess they could donate to a fund.
Strike funds.
What's your online presence?
The online, and you can follow us on social media. It's at SBWCA, the Starbucks Workers United California.
And how many workers would you say you represent locally here?
Locally, about 80.
And has there been any retaliation against your strike?
No, there has not. There's been retaliation of other workers, but not here in California where no one's got fired.
And, again, you say there's an upcoming vote at what date?
The vote's already happened. There's going to be bargaining starting October 26th.
And have you been involved in any of this? Are you aware of the likely, the particular issues that are going to come up at this bargaining will be what?
It's just going to be going over our economic proposals, making sure Starbucks knows what we want.
What kind of advances in wages and working conditions are you specifically looking for?
It depends, but, I mean, to me, there needs to be a clear cost of living adjustment, and the workers need to be heard. And right now, there's still nothing of that happening. They're still not bargaining at all.
What would be a fair cost of living adjustment, just offhand? Now, I'm not asking you to speak for the union, but
your own sense. My own sense, I think it needs to be, you know, I would say $22 an hour minimum wage would be a great starting point.
Current wages?
About $15 an hour for starting.
And how many workers actually can live locally in Santa Cruz?
Most of them are college students, so they're having their housing subsidized by the university. But it's still hard for them to commute in and get a living wage and be able to live here for longer terms.
Is there a lot of part-time employment that cuts people off from better benefits?
Woo! It does hurt because it's hard to work, you know, 20 hours a week during school and everything else as well.
And I realize you want to be a part of this protest and hear what's being said. Have you got any kind of contact information where I can reach you if I want a follow-up question?
Yes.
And I think I took his contact information.
Thank you, Jim. Of course. Thanks, Robert.
All right.
SEIUUHW.
Yeah!
Starbucks Workers United. UCAFT Lectures.
Free radio. Well, free radio on the net. We're a small group.
Oh, I think I was trying
you
to
look kind of familiar behind the mask somehow.
I was trying to find you all. We're all down, so. Yeah, please hit me up. We'd love to do it. We're going to be out here, so we'd love to do more.
Okay, and I'll talk to you more so you can, when you're not here, so you can actually hear what's going on.
Sure, yeah, I'm trying to give everybody like some dedicated time with a member to talk to, you know, whatever is happening. So.
I'm a little concerned that union members are foreclosed from talking to me. They keep saying we're not allowed to talk to you, which I find uncomfortable.
No. The reason they're saying that is just because we have folks who are, that they're like, they're going to be talking, so that's all. So yeah, I'm happy to help you out. No worries.
All right. And what's your name again?
I'm Robert Norse, and here's my little card in my hand. Of course.
No problem.
Peculiar hand.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Let me give you a card.
Okay.
Guys, this is just overwhelming, and I love it.
So I kept getting this reassurance from different people who wanted to send me to official spokespeople for the union and who refused to give any personal statements at all and who said, some said that they had been instructed not to do that, which I find really oppressive. I don't like it. And, he's soft-soaping it, but... probably because it's an embarrassing thing, and it shouldn't be that way. Anyway, let's take a musical break, shall we? So I'm kind of a fan of lots of harmonies and folk songs, soft lyrics, musicals. Don't much get into the hard rock stuff, or at least the stronger, louder, less intelligible stuff, but here's a song called Secret Missile by Pentagram, and these are the lyrics, which I found a little hard to hear during the music, so here they are. I tell it in sorrow that Europe is erased from the world map. Within the nuclear explosions that still go on at the remaining parts of Asia show that millions of people will die. World Health Organization is insufficient, and the United Nations Organization can't take the control to stop the war. Clouds of nuclear remnants and acid are still raining by and destroying forests and all living beings. The human race is vanishing, and the same is the world. God, save us, please. There is no reason to live a life in this fucking century. People dig each other's graves. Peace disappears from coast to coast. Traces of nuclear remains will lead the way to our race's dissolution. Send in course to end it all. Lock to its target, secret missile. Send in course, secret missile. No escape the crimes epidemic. All will end with a big explosion. Disarm them at fakes. Everyone soon we will end up dead. Annihilated is the embryo, premature death of a week's existence. Technological shelter saves a few from this fucking mess. Becomes primitive and mentally molded, soon urged by brutal instinct. Misanthropy and vengeance, a cause by this war that's been, if this beings have a chance to live, they live in artificialation. Trenches are full of corpses, cheated, innocent bodies lie. Mangled organs in minefields, the battle was to die. The vanishing of our planet, you may hear the cries. With those insatiables leading us, we won't die by our wanted fate. Surreptitious, suspicious plans destroyed my life in hate. War, pain, explosions, utter and death, suffer and death. I turned my face and looked back to Mother Earth in sorrow, said it was a mistake to start a war. There'll be nothing left tomorrow. There's no reason to live a life in this fucking century. People dug each other's graves now. My soul is in a fury. And here's the actual song. Thank you. And that was part of Pentagram's Secret Missile 93, which you probably are best advised to listen to and read the lyrics as the song goes on, and also watch the video online on YouTube. A pretty grim video. Lots of concentration camp bodies in a pile, people being shot dead. But then again, that's what happens in wars. That's what's happening in the Ukraine right now. And, of course, the incredible danger of mass annihilation through nuclear war is approaching day by day, night by night, hour by hour, as far as I can see, when I bother to look. Let's get back to the SEIU rally. Strike is still on. So keep one eye on that and one eye on the Pentagon. So it's back to the strike on Monday, the 17th. There were numerous establishment reporters, folks from the Sentinel. I didn't see any big, a couple of TV crews from the TV networks there too, perhaps, although I don't remember talking to any of them or seeing then people that I recognized. On the other hand, I think the Sentinel and Lookout or different new mega alternative medias were there. Here's a little of, I kind of barged in on some of their interviews and didn't learn a lot, but here's what I got.
Bridges out. Wastewater.
What do you mean wastewater?
Wastewater treatment
is not getting done.
Only for specific institutions, as far as I understand. But I can check with the strike captain.
That seems pretty outrageous. If that's not getting done, then like police is backing up and stuff.
They had a line.
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that.
That
seems essential.
Have people who came over on the line pass list, so it's still getting done.
Okay.
I just don't know to what degree. That's what I meant.
Okay.
So I can check on that for you.
Garbage, wastewater.
Garbage, wastewater, parking out. All city parks.
Library.
The issue that was being raised here was what services are being discontinued or held off or are delayed because of the strike.
Sorry, all city parks closed.
All closed. Like, you can't go in or...
You could try, but nobody's going to be there.
No, not the library, but the park.
I mean, again, nobody's attending it.
Okay.
So it's not going to get cleaned.
Okay.
It's not going to, like, if there's a water issue,
okay,
it's going to be very difficult to get it resolved.
So now I'd like to welcome our next speaker.
And again, and Robert, just so you know, I always talk on background. And I just ask that you all just confirm it with me
County treasurer,
as the union, and that's what I can do. I generally just ask that people don't quote me. That's all.
I'm saying this is your general sense, not...
Speaking for the union.
Okay, exactly. Exactly. All on background. But if you need me to confirm something, just ask me, and I'm happy to confirm or deny, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So all those services, those are in... Oh, and the landfill is closed.
Oh, really? Okay, the city landfill.
City landfill is closed. City recycling center, not happening. The food waste program, out. Done. Not happening.
Porta potties and the bench lands?
Out.
How about the people who are destroying the bench lands?
Are people who are demolishing the bench lands tomorrow? Will they be?
We're not working. So if they're going to call them in, then we'll just go back and have another discussion with the city. But yeah, as far as I know, we're not doing anything.
Are they employed by? Are they involved with the SEIU? Do you know?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, many of ours. Many Dora works the bench lands. I was trying to find her, but.
But, of course, the bench lines demolition proceeded the next day. And I heard kind of different stories. Didn't really actually interview any of the people who were working there, except a kind of a caustic exchange with Jeremy Leonard. And a few strong admonitions to police to stop destroying property and to bag it and tag it and store it rather than demolish it and throw it in a dumpster, particularly the survival gear of the folks. But I didn't learn if there was a separate organization or if scabs were being employed, and I never really got a clear answer from the SEIU people.
Okay.
Yeah, she works the bench. Many of our members work the benchlands as their site.
So it's likely the 9 a.m. deadline for eviction will not be happening tomorrow.
I can still do it, but we're not going to do it. The members aren't going
to
do it.
They have to hire somebody else.
Right.
Will that be a violation of any contract?
Oh, yeah. In addition, they can actually do whatever they want right now. But there is a degree to which they can contract out while the strike is still going on.
So we're not sure exactly whether it will be. There won't necessarily be punishment for scabs taking the bulldozing destruction job.
That's right, as far as I understand. And it's a terrible job to scab on top of it.
You got it.
Yeah, our members hate doing it. They hate it. They hate it doing it.
Yeah, how many people total are we talking about striking today? How many people?
I think our count was like 300, 350 altogether.
About these. Okay, I can do that.
And altogether.
I lost it.
No, it'll come to me. They will support this effort to end any
the numbers.
Unfair labor like practice. That.
And the voice in the background you hear is that of Fred Keeley. I recognize it as I hear over this tape or this audio.
I asked John this, but like, how much are you asking for? It's like you said there's no specific number, right? Is it the kind of situation where you'll know when you see it?
I think that's fair.
Okay.
I think that's fair. I mean, look, put yourself in their position. You've been working here 5 years. You're 15%, sometimes 30% underpaid in your department.
Yeah.
12% over 3 years is not going to cut it. Yeah. You'll know. And then I think you're trying to build trust with the city, more importantly, because they just get treated like garbage. They make parking workers pay for their own parking passes to go to work. Yeah, Jonna, here, right behind you, Jonna. You can talk to her. You can
vote a member. One last question.
Yeah, sure.
Are you living in the city yourself?
I am. I'm a citizen. Yeah.
How long have you been
here?
How much? What percentage of your rent do you pay?
God, brother. At least 47 something, 45%. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Does your you hold more than one job with the SEIU? Or?
I do not.
And are you unusually better paid than an average SEIU person?
No, in fact, I think we're paid a little bit less, actually.
What is your position?
Communication specialist. So, yeah, we're actually on the lower end because our members make less. So if they're making less, we're making less.
So is it on an equivalent, or do you pay slightly more because of the extra work you do?
No, I'm salaried, so, I mean, we're talking 80, 70 hours, no overtime. That's like a joke. There's no overtime for a staffer. Yeah, no, not at all.
And again, I guess the same question I've asked one of your fellow communications folks. What's the reason that you think the tops of the union accepted a deal and the membership rejected it? What were they simply not in touch with the membership?
I don't think that's fair. I think what happened was the city wanted to try to rush to a deal, and they said, hey, maybe this looks good for the workers, and the workers and the bargain members were like, okay, I think that that's all that they can get. So, but the rest of the membership felt like, you know what, it's not just about wages, it's not just about our benefits, it's about the respect, and I really think that this is why they're on the strike.
What are the tangible issues around respect that are important to you?
Oh, yeah, they like behind you, Jonna, she can talk to you about, she works in parking. You can't put up your SEIU stuff. You can't, going to a meeting, it becomes a problem for your union. Your managers, you know, put a magnifying glass on what you're doing all the time. This kind of stuff. If she needs new gloves to pick up some refuse or something, let's say, the city is going to take her gloves and they're going to hold it up to the light and make sure that she's telling, this is the kind of garbage.
Micromanaging?
Beyond that. Way beyond. Yeah. Talk to her. She'll tell you all about it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any more questions, Rob?
Well, you're urging me to do that. I will. She knows about the benchland situation.
Do I have any comment about it?
No, I think she's... Yeah, I'm curious about that, too, but do you think she's the person to talk to?
No, you're looking for Dora right over there. She may not want to... She probably won't want to talk to you, but, you know...
I don't think I ever found Dora, or if I did, she didn't want to talk.
That I would first start with Jonna and then maybe talk to Dora. But for sure, Brenda, I'm going to make sure you talk with Brenda.
I don't think that either Donna, Dora, or Brenda ever talked to me, but I did talk to a number of people. So Here's more.
Some admin and
can you free her from the gag rule?
I'm sorry?
I say, can you free her from the gag rule?
I mean, I've had that experience. I asked person after person.
Yeah.
And they all said, I cannot talk to you.
No problem. Yeah, yeah, that's okay. That's not a problem. We'll make sure to talk with her.
Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you, man. And I don't think he ever did, though, in spite of all his assurances.
No worries.
And again, we've been talking with
Ian Newman.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right.
To end, to conclude this press conference, I got Jason has a question for everyone.
When Santa Cruz is under attack, what do we do?
Fight back!
When Santa Cruz is under attack, what do we do?
Fight back!
When Santa Cruz is under attack, what do we do?
Fight back!
What do we do? One, two, three, go!
Where's your sign?
I'd rather be working.
Hey, how are you doing, Gloria? You two know each other.
Hi.
How you doing? Jaya.
And the folks are moving out now, heading toward Locust Street. And
blood-sucking Locust Street.
All right.
I'm going to go sit
down. Hopefully the vegetarian locust.
Indeed. Any comments on the benchland situation, Jaya?
Oh, my goodness. I went down there with a shovel. I picked up about 100 cigarette butts. I'm really glad I had gloves.
Have you maintained any contacts with folks down there?
The people I knew who were living down there, they all left because that part of the camp got cleared.
Did they move to other encampments or did they disperse?
Each one's got their own individual story.
Any time on Pacific Avenue recently?
Oh, yeah. I go to Pacific every day.
And what's your experience there compared with a few years ago?
Well, depends on what part of Pacific.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, if you get to the bus station, you're guaranteed to breathe construction dust. That kind of gets old.
Dig it. But no hassles from cops or hosts?
I don't think there's any hosts left.
I haven't seen... Well, I've seen... I guess they call themselves something else.
Oh, the hospitality people?
Correct.
They're great, you know. They're like... Really?
Are they hospitable to you?
They ignore me.
Do you regard that as hospitable?
I would say that's a spying technique.
You're not calling the hospitality people spies, surely?
They absolutely are spying.
Dig it. You're still doing jewelry work.
Oh, yeah. Would you like to see a piece?
I'm always like to... Well, why not? I'm not much of an aficionado or a maestro. Ooh, nice.
That one's all right. I got one even better.
You're showing me something from around your neck. What kind of a stone was that?
That one is a very rare stone. It's called... Well, it's called Super 7. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture of amethyst and six other minerals. Metals and minerals that are inside of the amethyst matrix. But the one I'm really proud of is this one.
It's pretty. It sparkles. It's got the right colors, green and a little blue.
You know, some of these minerals, you can only turn it into jewelry with wire wrapping because the mineral's so soft. So if you try to set it, or drill a hole through it, it just explodes.
Setting
just,
it involves just simply,
you know, putting it into like a silver or a gold
and
frame.
It won't stay there.
No. It's not hard enough.
You're here.
Oh, man, everyone left.
They're going somewhere, but I'm not... Shmuel, where are they going, do you know?
I'm betting that they're going to come around.
Oh.
That's why I'm going this way, but...
You're going to take the short route.
They could go elsewhere.
Okay.
Who knows? How are you, Matt?
I'm okay. And we've been talking. Anything more you want to say, John?
I do. Because it's so exhilarating to be around this crowd of dedicated locals who are invested in the community. And Santa Cruz is a really special place. It's a healing place. It's an empowerment place for children and women to, you know, you got to feel safe and secure to do that type of growth. And I resonate with what's going on. I mean, when people are faced with poverty and, you know, the inflation is not going to go down anytime soon. So the logical thing is you finance the people that are part of the mechanism of the city. You know, if you think of the whole city as like a machine, every part has to be functional. You can't just let it get rusty or degrade. You have to lubricate it. And the way we lubricate is with finance. I'm not a capitalist.
But you think people should be paid what they're worth?
Well, I think that... our leaders should value equality. And no one should be extorted.
You don't believe in slave labor?
Well, I wouldn't say that the city workers are being enslaved. I would say that they are being extorted.
Exploited?
Extorted.
Uh-huh.
You could say exploitation. I wouldn't argue. But what I'm saying is extort, because you make someone an offer, you know, you get them working. Then when the cost of living doubles, you got to double their pay. You can't give them a 5% raise, you know, if the inflation is higher than that. You just gotta be a human. You gotta treat them with respect as an equal.
But that's gonna break the budget, Jai. You don't want to do that.
I would say that money is just. It's just a form of energy, and when people are forced into a scarcity mentality or a scarcity mindset, they go into a fight or flight. They go into a survival mode, and we don't want the people that are the foundation of the city to be in survival mode, to be in fight or flight. We want them to feel safe and secure in their community, because that's how a community thrives. It's like if you go into a house and the mother of the house is uncomfortable, none of the children are going to be able to thrive. No one in that house is going to actually feel comfortable until the mother feels safe and secure.
Any more thoughts, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of these city council members or whoever's in charge should have respect for
they're coming back again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we want to respect everyone, but when someone's part of the blood and the bones of the city, when they're really essential, we could say, how are you going to disrespect those people? I mean, that's just going to corrode the society. That's just going to corrode the community. And in terms of the budget, you know, Santa Cruz is a gold mine. We've got tourism, we've got agriculture. So I don't believe in scarcity.
Me neither. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
And the union folks are back, having walked around the block, led by a man with a big brown beard and pursued by Sentinel reporters and photographers and well-wishers to some extent. And a little music at last. And it looks like they may have lost a few people going around the block, but there's still a bunch of folks here. Tables for drinks, coffee, literature. I should go get some literature. Thank you. He picks up trash. Hey, man. Hi. I'm Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hello. You are?
Brenda, but I'd rather not be recorded.
Well, I'm doing this for a free radio. There's something I can do but record.
I'd rather not.
Okay.
No,
you.
Okay, one sec. Sorry.
See what I mean?
That's okay. That's okay. That's okay.
They gag themselves. But I appreciate your trying. Thank you, Anne.
Yeah, no problem.
9:38.
Give me another sec, sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm going to grab some literature while you do.
Sure.
Jay, you tell me at the courthouse that you did see a city worker picking up trash. So that
yeah, I saw one truck driving by, but, you know, it says City of Santa Cruz, and I saw a person, you know, picking up trash with a little trash tool and a bucket. So, and, I mean, the police are working.
Well, the police are not part of the same union, as you
right.
know.
But
so.
All of the City of Santa Cruz workers are?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
To find out the answer to that question, see the guy with the black T-shirt talking to the guy with the red T-shirt?
Yeah.
He can tell you.
I'll ask him.
Yeah. I would think.
Yeah, it's good to be informed and know, you know, as many of the details as possible.
I agree.
And I don't blame anyone or, you know, I don't want to...
I do, of course.
You know, I don't want to act like someone's an enemy. I just feel like people are uninformed.
Well, some people have special interests, but they may be good people privately, but the positions they occupy lead them to oppress other people because they're part of a machine that does that. And let's take another musical break before we return to this. Perhaps let's be optimistic and call it resistance to oppression rather than a sort of a token stand up for your rights before we accept the next not terribly good deal. We'll see. And this next song is called A Sense of Belonging. It's, I think, somewhat more intelligible than the last one, but just in case, here are the lyrics. Once there was confidence, but now there is fear. Once there was laughter, but now only tears. Once there were reasons for our optimism, but now we're all drowning in a sea of cynicism. But I hope and I pray in my own naive way that one day we can reach some sort of understanding. Try a little more sharing, try a little more giving. Might find a sense of belonging, might find a sense of belonging. And I know you think I'm young and naive because I go on CND marches, that's Committee for Nuclear Disarmament. Well, that's my decision, and I think that you're the one who's naive. If you believe all the things you see on television, it's all propaganda, and like a fool you accept it, and like a fool you ignore it. Why don't you try and stop it? Try and find a sense of belonging. I know you watch World in Action and Panorama, and to you it's just another soap opera, drama. It can't happen here. We'll have a nice cup of tea, and we'll all stay calm, and we'll all come to no harm in our nice, warm underground shelters. There'll be helter-skelter. There'll be babies dying. I've seen the devil smiling. I've seen the devil smiling. Try to find a sense of belonging, a sense of belonging. And you laugh and make jokes about what you will do when the button is pressed and we hear the four-minute warning. And if you think it's funny now, wait till the bomb goes off. You'll be in fucking hysterics. You'll see babies dying. You'll hear mothers crying. I'm only asking for one thing. just want a sense of belonging. No more weapons and no more wars, no more violence. And what's it all for anyway? It's all so senseless. Try to find a sense of belonging. Let's try a little more giving. Let's try a little more sharing. Might find a sense of belonging. And once there was confidence and once there was laughter and now there is fear and now there are tears and there's no reasons for our optimism. You've gone and drowned me in your sea of pessimism. No more weapons and no more wars, no more violence, and what's it all for anyway? Try to find a sense of belonging. Oh, find a sense of sharing. Try a little more giving. Try a little more loving. Try to find a sense of belonging.
Once there was laughter, but now only tears. Once there were reasons for our optimism, but now we're all drowning in a sea of cynicism.
And that's not a song where I like the lyrics, but it's kind of hard to hear them, and the tune is not that entrancing, so I don't know. Back to the SEIU and my conversation with Jaya, the street artisan and political critic.
They're bureaucrats?
Yes.
And if they don't have that ability, then they don't get promoted.
Well, then they should go do something where they'll be promoted in a decent structure. But I understand what you're saying.
The thing is, all of these people that are in the upper echelons of government, they've been working in government for at least 10 years, probably close to the 20. And if they're not good at keeping secrets and maintaining confidentiality, then they don't get promoted. And they either stay in the lower echelons of the government.
Crimea River of Tears.
Or they leave, you know, and they go. Like my mom, she worked for the Migrant Head Start, which is a federal program, for 20 years. And when Donald Trump got elected, she told me if Donald Trump knew what she did, her entire department would be closed. So even within the government, they're keeping secrets from each other. You know, and if you're an outsider, if you don't know how the government is run, then it's really hard to understand. It's like a reptile. You need to dissect it to understand what's going on inside of it. If you're just looking at it externally, you know what I mean? If you never go into the jail, if you never go in to the White House.
Yeah, but you can learn by
seeing. You can just see the external.
You can talk to prisoners. You can talk to guards. You can find out how things are going without becoming a part of the reptile. And the idea that you have to be a part of the reptile because you have to increase your promotion status and your use of information, your access to it, I think is not true.
Yeah, I would just say that those people who actually have experience as employees, they will have insight into what's really going on. And it's going to be a different insight than what you get from the media or even the press release.
Oh, fuck the media, but I'm thinking of they're not necessarily going to have insight into how people on the ground are feeling because their heads are up the ass of the management. See, that's the problem.
Yeah, and the way that they exert and maintain control is through division. So people are always going to be arguing. And the controller, he doesn't join either side. He's controlling the dialogue. He's controlling the context of the argument. It's called disaster capitalism. This is how they maintain their power, and this is how they maintain their wealth.
And I'm going to go record her, and we've been talking with...
My name is Jaya.
Thank you, Jaya.
Again.
Whoa! You want a sign? You haven't found anybody yet, I take it.
No.
Yeah, see, the gag stuff doesn't go well with me.
I know.
And I don't think it's a good idea. And it's not you.
I'm trying.
It's apparently the policy of the union, and I don't like it.
What about Joanna? Johanna. Yeah, hold on a sec. She was just up in the hat. Let me talk to her. I'll be right back.
Okay, thank you. So we have some folks from United Farm Workers here. We want to talk about the strike with respect to, is this anything to do with any other unions, or is this all about just...
I mean, I think, I like to think that all the unions in Santa Cruz can stand in solidarity. I've been on strike with graduate students during the Wildcat strike 2 years ago. But I can't really speak to that. Right now, I'm just here for SEIU 521.
And what other unions should we be aware of and be concerned about?
Well, concerned. I'm not sure what you mean by concerned about
Their struggles.
Yeah. I know the graduate students are bargaining with the administration, and I know, you know, nurses have been working really hard, and other essential workers have been working really hard throughout the pandemic to keep Santa Cruz safe and running. And you know, I just think
unions. Where can we get more information about them locally?
Talk to your coworkers. Talk to the DSA. Talk to
anything online.
Well, I know Santa Cruz Left is a great resource. That's the DSA Santa Cruz chapter's online news outlet, and I think they do a really good job covering things that aren't picked up or covered thoroughly by commercial media here. But yeah, I would recommend Santa Cruz Left. Or talk to your coworkers and other unions, you know, nurses, service workers, teachers, whoever, you know, talk to your neighbors.
Good. And these are good suggestions, I would imagine. I mean, you know better than I.
Yeah.
Any dates coming up for the graduate union negotiations that you're aware of?
Actually, I think I've left the university, so you should talk to some of the other graduate students or faculty or students who are more knowledgeable. But I do believe that there's a Joy. A lot of people here who could. Yeah.
And we've been talking with...
This is Avi. I work down at Venture Quest Kayaks, but I've been with the UCSC graduate students as well.
Cool.
With Food Not Bombs occasionally. So I try to stay aware of kind of...
Well, with DSA and Love Boat.
And help out when I can, yeah.
Yeah. There's a... Do you know if the... if tomorrow is a deadline for the demolition of every encampment up to the footbridge, which is, I don't know, it's going to affect 50 or more people, is that going to be stopped by this strike, or is that not going to be affected?
That is a great question, and I would love to hear city workers coming together with the unhoused to prevent that from happening. But I don't know if I have the influence to convince people to do that.
You can
but
do it.
I'm all in favor of that.
Right on.
Yeah.
And again,
I hope that that we realize that the priority is not displacing people who are trying to survive, but to actually create the housing and support services that we need, and to really to rebuild that community in Santa Cruz that includes everyone. So yeah, this is Avi, AVI. Thanks.
Thank you, Avi.
Take care.
Just want to make sure I could read it. Yeah. You got an email as well?
Sure.
So I'm talking, what's your name again, madam?
Joy Schendeldecker.
Okay, and you're one of foolish enough to run for mayor, as I understand it.
I am.
But more important, you're here supporting this strike.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And you have some thoughts about the impact of the strike, possibly, although you don't know for sure, on tomorrow's demolition in terms of the workers who are running the instruments that will be destroying people's property.
Yeah, because I'm trying to remember the budget that I looked at maybe 6-9 months ago that had additional funding for what they call environmental remediation. Basically, you know, funding positions that are, they sell them as a kind of care position, but really they're just about really clearing encampments. And I can't remember, I'm going to look back into this, are they city employees or are they contracted out? They might be contracted out. They might not be city employees that are unionized, which is also fucked up, if I'm remembering correctly. But
if you find anything more about that, as I was asking you earlier, and you hear about it before 9 o'clock tomorrow, please call me.
Yeah, because obviously if they're city workers, they won't be able to work, right? If they're contractors, well, I don't know. They're kind of scabs, aren't they? And then this also exposes how when the police do this work, they're not regular union employees. They're a whole different, the police are a whole different kind of employee from our really essential workers that keep our city running. They have their own
union. I'm suggesting police aren't essential.
But they have their own union. They're not regular, they're really not regular employees. They have such a different position. I mean, they can kill people.
It's, keep you safe, Joy.
Yeah, I know. It's a complicated thing. But you know, for them to be doing city work when there's a strike of city workers, that is not being in solidarity with city workers. They really shouldn't be clearing, should they? I'm thinking out loud.
What you should be doing as both a citizen and a bureaucrat if you become one.
Yeah. Love bureaucracy.
Well, it's the machine that allows the reptile to do its eating.
Yeah.
Okay. If you find anything out, and if you can ask questions.
I can ask around here, too, because, I mean, there might be some people here, SEIU 521 workers, that might know. So I'll ask around. I'll let you know if I find out. I'll send you a message.
I appreciate your offering to ask. I think that's great.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Certainly. Carry on.
Yes, indeed. You too. And keep up the good work.
Remember, well-behaved women seldom make history. Not that that makes them much different. But you don't get to hear about the history that you guys make.
I know.
Take care.
Thanks, Robert.
And from Joy Schindeldecker, the mayoral candidate and union supporter, and occasional Huff participant, as well as working with, I guess, Sanitation for the People, maybe Love Boat. I confuse those groups. Moved to the San Lorenzo Benchlands, actually to the park. And I think I went into the Benchlands too, but I certainly started in the upper park area, again, the same day on the 17th, the day before the demolition, and here's what I got. Okay, well, it's the 17th. I'm walking up the path, which is fenced on both sides, in the upper San Lorenzo Park area. I'm talking with
Richard.
And Richard, you're carrying a sleeping bag and some hygiene materials. You say this is something you regularly do?
I just try to make time every once in a while when I have extra stuff to come down here to drop it off to the people down here.
And let's say the last time you did this was when?
Probably last month.
And do you have much in the way of connection with folks here?
And before Richard answers that question, I want to point out that one of the great disadvantages both to the city and to the community around it and to the folks who are living in the encampments that are being dispersed, when their dispersal, the problem with the dispersal, one of the many problems, is that community members like Richard, who are providing support, can't find the people that are dispersed. Now, whether this is a conscious strategy on the part of the city to, so to speak, starve out or pressure people into, some people into limited programs, others into fleeing the area, it's not explicitly put that way in the debates and the discussions insofar as they happen at city council at all and don't take place simply behind closed doors. But this could be, in fact, a lot of the motivation, and it certainly is a lot of the impact, whether it's a conscious motivation or not. It's some of the result of this destruction of communities of homeless people who've come together, however wretched the conditions. There is a form of support between individuals in the community who are there and people from the larger community who come and recognize their needs and the disparity between the poverty in that community and the richness in the surrounding community.
Just because I grew up here, so I pretty much, just from seeing people around town and such.
Have you been outside yourself, lived outside?
Yes, I have.
How long did it take you to get out of that condition?
A couple years. I was living in a car, but then I was able to...
How did the police treat you?
It was really bad in the beginning. And then when I finally got off the street, but during the time I was out there, it was really tough. They didn't allow, this is before the camping ban was on, where they didn't allow people to really park and sleep in their vehicles. If they seen you, they'd wake you up and have you move. Now they don't really do that. So.
What year was this?
2014.
Well, I appreciate your bringing the stuff. Just
and I don't wish to break into my appreciation, or actually, I'm doing it anyway. The idea that the camping ban is gone is kind of a myth. One that is, of course, created by city council to appeal to the, dare I call them liberal hypocrites or liberal half-hearts or centrists in the community who just don't like the idea of their taxpayer dollars being used to suppress and uselessly run around homeless people that goes nowhere other than causing them more pain and, you know, causing problems on the streets. So to create the illusion that they're doing something, or to maybe persuade themselves they're doing something, the city government, under its current government and under past so-called liberal or progressive governments, creates these sort of token programs, or somewhat more than token, but always less than anything that actually broadly serves the community and is what Brandon Adams calls scalable and can be, you know, expanded to everyone who needs it outside, which really, of course, is what you need to deal with that situation. And there are various excuses for this. Oh, it's a magnet effect. It would cause everyone to come. It's a national problem. And I've kind of outlined some of these earlier. The county has to do it. They're the real social service agency. Oh, they're just a bunch of bums and tramps and junkies. They don't want to come in. They can't follow rules. It's their problem. It's their fault. This is the narrative. I call it the false narrative because I think that's exactly what it is, that insulates people from their own consciences and from the realities of the pains of people, the pain of people who are outside. And back to the Good Samaritan. Well, actually, what I'd forgotten to say here was that the camping ban is continuing, only it's being done under different labels. And I say this repeatedly, but it has to be mentioned. The fact that you don't see tickets with the signature of the CSSO, the Camping Standards and Services Act, which is the new camping ban, is because, I speculate, they don't want to risk a lawsuit because they're afraid the ACLU or some other organization, disability rights, or maybe even, might be too far-fetched to think at some point, the Union of the Homeless might step in and say, hold it, you're enforcing a law that's criminal. You have no shelter for the overwhelming population, yet you're criminalizing their status. Under Martin versus Boise, you can't do this. And under the more recent decisions expanding Martin versus Boise to allow for this to be done for civil, or should we say smaller infraction penalties, and to allow for a class action lawsuit, which would allow every single person to join a class who is in that. That can be done, too, if you start acknowledging that you're actually enforcing the camping ban and you don't have adequate shelter for the, 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits. But, of course, they don't really care about this because they don't have shelter for the benchlands and they're still moving them out. And one of the reasons they do that is because people are not resisting. They're intimidated, they're baffled, they're confused, they don't see the community coming out to support them. They don't see us in the organizations, the activists coming out to support them. And so they simply retreat, they flee, they hide. They do what folks have always done to avoid lethal and brutal force and the seizure of their life support system, their sleeping bag, their tent, and so forth.
I don't. You do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
And again, we're talking with
Richard.
Thanks,
yeah,
Richard.
Have a good day, sir.
All right. Okay, I'm talking with
Daniel Bellegarde.
Daniel, you got a backpack and you're picking out. Looks like you picked up a needle. You're going to what? Toss it or use it? What's the plan?
Actually, the truth of it is I'm using it to help clear up a little bit of staph infection, just to help drain what needs to be drained, and it's the best tool for the job, I believe.
And you're outside yourself, but you're not outside here. You're elsewhere in the city.
That's true. Most of my peers are down here at the park. I come down here to say hey and get what I need, and I'm finding it a little bit more comfortable for myself to be on the outskirts, and that's just a personal choice.
Living alone or in a group of people?
Right now, I choose to be alone, but that doesn't mean that I can't, you know, hook up with the right people and have some partners.
Yeah. Any hassles from police or their authorities?
No, I keep my head down, and I try to pick up trash and look productive, though. You know, it's always a dog-eat-dog. I got a backpack stolen a couple of days ago with everything I had. So, you know, you go through these moments of starting over, and you see in the community who actually is going to help you and who notices, and it's really interesting. So that's my take on that.
Any loss of property in the past, generally before the loss of this backpack? And if so, was it from police or from fellow folks who are struggling or from unidentified thieves?
Yeah, this is the first time it's been all my possessions in particular. It's the first time I've been in this position starting over. And, I wish I knew. When last time I saw it, I was with my peers, and, we're all a little shady, so I really don't know. I don't know how to answer that one. Yeah.
Now, also, I'm passing around a small flyer that talks about a potential lawsuit to make the city think twice before going after more encampments later on. It's right now an idea and an aspiration rather than a reality. But would you be interested in this for yourself?
I'd definitely be interested in checking it out. You know, I've been on the streets for a while now and have been in off and on in shelters. So I'd be interested in getting off the streets, and depending on what was needed, I'd be interested in volunteering my time for sure.
Well, let me give you the sign up list. Some folks have already signed up, and I don't want to raise anybody's hopes because, as I said, the main woman who's organizing this is out of town for another week. By the time she gets back, everybody will probably be moved out of here, and so it may all be bullshit for this particular camp, but maybe for the next one, if there is, because I don't think they're going to leave people alone after this either. I think they're going to go after them in separate places, but I don't know, you know. So, you know, it's hard to say. If you want, put down your number and your email address, and here's a pen.
Well, what I can do for you is just give you my name, because I don't have any of those.
No.
I don't have a phone or an email.
Do you have a place? Do you have a contact place?
I have the Coral Street address, I believe.
Okay. Gary, we played your thing last week. It was good. If you want to hear yourself, is your phone still operational? I've left you a couple messages. You may have gotten them. I don't know if you got them again. And I'm conducting these interviews along the path above the benchlands that runs, it's the only sort of open, accessible area to the public, other than the benchlands is still accessible, at least the part of it that has not been cleared is still accessible, or was when I was down there on Monday. Of course, the remaining section all the way up to the footbridge between Water Street and the footbridge is now fenced off and inaccessible. But folks are camping, of course, along the pathway. They've moved their possessions up to the pathway, and no doubt they're soon going to be dispersed from there under the pretext that they're being offered shelter at the armory and the overlook. I haven't heard of anybody actually being offered shelter at 1220 River, generally. It's kind of the special candy, less restrictive environment. You can actually walk in and out like an actual adult person. Don't have to be kind of nannied in on a van and nannied out. And I don't think you have to check in or check out the way you do in these other places at the armory and the overlook. Again, I'm not entirely clear of the exact differences between the rules that are different at the armory and the lookout up at De La Vega, if that's what's happening. Hope to get more information about it and pass it on. People are not doing too well. Gary, who I spoke with, who you heard in a prior netcast a week or two ago, who talked about the destruction of his property and how he wanted to do a lawsuit, and he actually was one of the first folks to sign up on what is now a list of 10 or 20 people. He was weak and seemed ill. When I talked to him, you can hear me trying to talk to him. He didn't really want to be on audio because he was feeling so poorly. Naturally, the stress that everyone's being subjected to by this, roust him, run him around so that we can plant grass in the benchlands and, you know, persuade the bigots that we're running these undesirable transient elements out of town is infuriating, or at least disheartening, and is certainly, well, it's infuriating, actually, except unless you're impacted by it, I guess I'd say maybe you're less likely to feel fury. It certainly affects me that way. That is to say, it doesn't affect me the way it might.
Now, it goes through the machine, and I left two. I can keep trying. And if you want, I'll give access to a computer at any point. You can take one of these.
One more time. Which one?
Robert.
That's right. I know. I've met you before. I know who you are. Thank you so much, Robert.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing anything. I'm just... Sorry about that, Gary. I keep turning other people. Sorry. So we're talking with...
Jack.
And Jack, you say you hadn't gotten notice before, but you just heard that there's going to be a demolition from the fence up to the, this is, I understand it, phase 5.2 up to this bridge, and it's happening tomorrow. You heard about this, but you said you hadn't heard about it before?
Yeah, I wasn't given any notice. They said that there were verbal notices or whatever, but before we have seen paper notices, you know, for the previous demolitions. But for this segment of the closure, there was no indication that this was going to happen tomorrow at 9.
How long have you been down here, Jack?
2 years.
And have you been moving to kind of keep ahead of the police, or have you been pretty much in this one area?
I moved to keep ahead of the police because I just was trying to, you know, stay in compliance, you know, but it's like...
I'm not suggesting you were moving to avoid the law, but rather you were told that area was going to be demolished, and so you will move deeper into the benchlands?
Correct. I even took their offer for the overlook, just trying to stay, like I said, in compliance with what they want.
Tell me about the overlook.
I haven't been there yet, so today at 3 o'clock.
Are you going to go actually up there, or you go to a table and get on a waiting list?
They gave me a voucher to go up there, so I wanted to, you know, check out the facility and see if it was, you know,
doable for you.
I mean, beggars can't be choosers. I was kind of like forced into transit, so I mean, if it's what they're offering, we can't stay here. I don't want to be, you know, cited or criminalized for being, you know, transient.
Yeah, clearly. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Been here. A little more, like about 2 years since the pandemic. I was wrongfully accused of a charge. It was a domestic dispute. It was 2 years old. I was already in San Jose, living in San Jose 2 years prior. Went to Texas to start over because my relationship was toxic. But I guess my ex-girlfriend called and made a charge against me with a friend that was a police officer for corporal injury to spouse or cohabitant times 3, terrorist threat, evangelism. Pretty much they said that I told him I was going to kill him and I broke in and tried to do it. But there was no indication I lived there or nothing. It was just he said, she said. And it was a 2-year-old warrant because I never got served it. And I was living in Texas. I was ministering with Victory Outreach. I was a youth pastor. I was leading worship, opening service. Took a brigade of evangelists through San Jose in August prior to the pandemic. So this is in March. They come and serve in Austin, which is Travis County, comes and serves me a warrant and in March of 2020, saying they had an upgrade and they show that, you know, that I was abiding, that I must have been a fugitive. So they house me there for 14 days. Santa Clara comes and gets me. Extradites me back to San Jose or Santa Clara.
Housed you where initially?
Huh?
They housed you in...
In the jail there in Travis County.
In Texas?
In Texas. just to come get just to, that's California's. You know, they wanted me. They said there was this warrant. It was a $100,000 bail, and I'm sitting there flipping out. You know, in jail, and they extradited me just to take me to court. I was in California within 8 hours, and then they released me homeless. Because,
typical.
Yeah, because they messed up or something. I don't know. I had to go through. The charges were dropped, but I still go through the process of because the DA still takes it somehow. I don't know how that works. All I know is that by going through the process, I've been transient, and it was a week before the pandemic, so they told me to get two ankle bracelets. So now I'm walking homeless with two ankle bracelets, and then it's all of a sudden shelter in place.
Sheltered with the ankle bracelets.
I guess so. I walked for a long time. My feet hurt so bad I cried, and then I was like, I need shelter. There's nowhere for me to go. They told me to build shelter, so I came home, and Santa Cruz was offering here at San Lorenzo, so it was a comforting place. And then here we kind of established a community within the people from the pandemic, from the fires, and from the homeless before, and. We're just trying to find a place for us.
Were you living in the upper area near the Duck Pond area?
Or? No, I was living down here on the bench lands, and then
before the bench lands was established as a campground.
Yeah, well they had this was their shelter there for shelter in place.
Right.
And so when they told us to move from there, I moved to Hal's Trail, and then I kind of was going through it.
And Hal's Trail, for those who don't know, is. As I understand it, the trail that's sort of parallel to and right adjacent to Highway 17 that becomes Highway 1 as you leave the San Jose Santa Cruz section of it and head toward downtown Santa, well, not downtown Santa Cruz, but the Mission Street area.
Just trying to find a place, because I was kind of forced into this and just trying to make the best of it. And not resort to any crime or anything, because sometimes you get hungry. Thanks for Food Not Bombs. I actually met somebody, so I took it. This may be a blessing, and I went to my mother's house with her, and I realized, being there, that I wasn't really allowed there, because my mom, the COVID, my grandfather's old, my mother. Rents, and so I came back here, hoping that I maybe get some housing. So it looks like that may be happening. That's what they should do for all of us. There's all a bunch of these.
You say it's happening.
Projects going up right now.
Have you been promised any particular housing in a particular place?
No. But I don't see why not. There's a lot of. Housing projects going up around the city, and there's a boatload of empty homes.
That's for sure. A lot of empty homes, a lot of housing projects for people who have money, but not for people who are poor or homeless.
So just trying to find a place, That's it.
Okay. Are you interested in signing up to stop the sweeps, which we're trying to think about maybe a lawsuit someday, somewhere? It's uncertain. But people might want to be plaintiffs to say, I've been moved. I had no place to go. It put me at further risk.
Yeah.
Flyer?
If I had proof what they're doing was illegal, then I would make a stand. But I don't know. I'm intimidated by the badge, but I'm not afraid to go to jail for doing what's right.
And would you like to, do you have any contact information that you can put down?
Yeah.
Phone number, email, print it very, very much as though you're dealing with a person who can't read very well. Make it very.
I'm in the trash together.
So we're talking again with
Jack.
Jack, you say you talked to Brad, the trash man who was picking up the trash, and learned something interesting.
Yeah, well, he was a good friend of mine. He was just getting tired of picking up, the trash that, the people living in the bench lines should be doing themselves, and was wanting a new contract. So I know there was a rumor saying that he was threatened, but I don't believe he was threatened. He just, you know, got a new contract.
Did pick up trash somewhere else?
Yeah. Oh, I believe that, you know, whoever is issuing the contract, you know, is involved with the closure, knew that the closure was coming, and so, you know, instead of him, you know, not having a job, they, you know, give him another contract.
You're good. How long ago did you talk to him?
About 2 months ago.
Okay, and have you noticed the trash pickups have stopped?
Inside the benchland, yes. So a group of us started to do it ourselves. The city did issue us some brown cans, so thank you, city. And they pick them up, you know, regularly, just like the trash man does. The thing is that the brown cans need to be on the street. So a group of us, you know, we're doing that, trying to keep this place as sanitary as possible. You know, dealing with what we have here.
Dig it. And you mentioned, Gary, that you yourself were aware of the environmental impacts of this?
Not until way later, but yeah.
And when I last spoke to you, you seemed in better health. How are you doing health-wise? Looks like you're feeling under the weather a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm fighting the flu.
Think it may be flu?
Yeah.
COVID, perhaps not?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't really gotten COVID yet. So.
Any medical attention? Are you looking for any medical attention?
Nope.
Okay. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm just going to, you know, write it out and hopefully feel better soon. But, yeah.
Well, feel free to call me if you just want to stay in touch just for the hell of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boy. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port. And our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the port. Of the world, boys, we're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys, pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boys, best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Our boots are needing a shine, boys. Boots are needing a shine. But our Coca-Cola is fine, boys. Coca-Cola is fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair. So we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And dump the reds in a pile, boys. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boys. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck. And we'll find you a leader that you can't elect. Those treaties we signed were a pain in the neck. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And clean the Johns with a rag, boys. Clean the Johns with a rag. If you like, you can use your flag, boys. If you like, you can use your flag. We've got too much money, we're looking for toys. And guns will be guns, and boys will be boys. But we'll gladly pay for all we destroy. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Please stay off of the grass, boys. Please stay off of the grass. Here's a kick in the ass, boys. Here's a kick in the ass. We'll smash down your doors. We don't bother to knock. We've done it before, so why all the shock? We're the biggest and the toughest kids on the block. And we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And when we butchered your sons, boys, when we butchered your sons, have a stick of our gum, boys, have a stick of our bubble gum. We own half the world, oh say can you see? And the name for our profits is democracy. So like it or not, you will have to be free. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.
And that's an oldie by Phil Oakes, Cops of the World. Of course, what we got here are the cops of the park or the cops of the town. But they're still part of the same machine, unfortunately. Let's skip ahead on the same day, the 17th, to the noon meal at Food Not Bombs and catch a few voices there.
Oh, it's the 17th. I'm here at the Food Not Bombs encamped area. Even though it says no trespassing or loitering against any building, an entranceway, alcove, parking lot, because these premises belong, I say belong, to the Santa Cruz County Bank. I'm talking with...
This is Cooper.
And before we hear Cooper, who I'm always glad to hear from, actually, kind of gives us some continuity from someone outside. This is an actual encampment right across the street from the Food Not Bombs meal, next to the bank. She describes a bit of it. It's covered with tarps and pillows for people to sit on when they're inside. And there's, I think, a table that might have been used as a literature table by Food Not Bombs. And there's also now a bulletin board at Food Not Bombs. At least I put one there. And I believe Drew, who's managing the meal often, which runs from 12 to 3 daily at the town clock, has keeping it up. And it's an opportunity for people to post notes, catch news, and of course see my latest propaganda if I ever get over there and post it, which I'm going to be trying to do today on the, I guess it's the 20th when the show is being netcast.
Who is in a lean-to encampment that, with a certain...
Right, it's a daytime. Just, it's a day camp.
A day camp. Excuse me. My mistake.
It's only during Food Not Bombs because of the, just to shade the area because there's not a lot of shade.
A shady area.
Shady area. Shady characters
so
everywhere.
How have you been treated at night and where have you gone at night?
We've been doing okay. We've stayed here on several nights. We have a couple of our crew that camp on the ground. And so they just go along the sidewalk, you know, single.
And some of us lean against the fence,
but,
actually.
The bank has their own security people that they hire, and the security guards will come out at like midnight, 1 a.m., and if anybody is even by this gate or in the alcove seeking shelter in that back little alcove area where at 1 a.m. nobody is using the bank or walking back and forth, but the security people come and harass the people, have them get up and move or threaten police, and that's via the bank. paying for that.
Last time this happened was?
Last night. I do it every night.
And what's your response when this happens?
Well, I mean, if people don't know that are sleeping back in the alcove, you know, they're kind of startled awake, you know, told they have to move. So they move 4 feet onto the sidewalk, which they were out of the way. They were in the alcove.
And now they're blocking the sidewalk.
But now they have to move at 1 a.m., and they're already stressed, you know. And some of the people that they're having move are 65, 70 years old. And they're having to move out to the sidewalk just 4 feet to appease the bank. And it doesn't make sense because they were out of the way and in a safer location in the alcove or right here in this entranceway that's never used or opened is another safe place. But the bank pays to have people removed to move 4 feet.
Dread out your thoughts.
One small comment. P.S. People don't like to be woke up, especially when they're 60 or 70, and then go back to sleep, and then woke up, and then go back to sleep, and then woke up and go back to sleep. That's one P.S. I wanted to put in.
It's good military training.
That's brutal.
All right, PTSD that's training. Torture. PTSD
that's
training,
torture.
Yes.
Yes, PTSD training. Yeah. Excellent. So has this happened to you recently?
Well, we've been all right because, we have empathy for our crew that has happened.
Another small P.S. If you have your own vehicle and you're very careful where you park, they kind of consider that you're out of the way. The police do. They kind of give us a break. A little bit, not much.
The wealthier homeless have their vehicles. How interesting.
Well, 2 nights ago we had the...
And the PSer is Dread Eye, who's was an officer of the Union of the Homeless, is a longtime worker at Food Not Bombs, and he's been able to resolve some of the problems with his vehicles that he's talked about in past shows. He actually got his driver's license back, and, that's his current status. It's getting better, apparently, although he's still outside looking for housing.
The police come 3 nights ago, I guess it was, and they came and harassed just the women that were camping. We had one woman by herself right here by the clock tower, and they brought 4 or 5 cops in to mess with her. And then they went across the street over there to one of the other women by herself and messed with her, said, you can't sleep here, you can't camp here, that this is all off limits, that the clock tower area closes at midnight. And yeah, there nothing closes. It's people's property. People live 24 hours a day.
How can you say that? Don't you understand the bank needs to keep an eye on this area? And the clock, how could they clean the clock if they didn't have midnight to do it?
I think they are getting their clock cleaned.
Yeah, so that would be nice.
And, you know, I guess our city went on strike as far as the...
that's what I hear.
And, you know, they hope that their demands will be met, but I don't think their demands are going to be met because when you have, like, a tyranny is your directors, oppression is the desired effect. Uncomfortableness is the desired effect of the leaders that are running our state and our city right now. So I don't think they're going to renew anybody's contract.
Comfort for a few, discomfort for the many.
I think that our downtown streets team will probably take over the city job of the cities, and it closes down. I think the whole thing's closing down.
So
they essentially, and I'm not against a union or anything, I think that you hope that your demands will be made, but they essentially quit.
These, not well paid, but better paid than, let's say, folks here, union workers are going to quit. I would be interesting if they did, but I don't see it.
Well, on strike, they don't come back if their demands aren't met, right?
Alito.
Is that correct? If their demands aren't met, they don't come back.
Well,
they just walked off their job.
Except some people start worrying that they can't pay their rent.
I'm not disagreeing. I think they've hired way too many people, and they pay them all peanuts. And that's, again, tyranny, so that the people that are doing the real work are really suffering and living with very little. I talked to one of the girls who works for the city and does maintenance and garbage collection and all that. She said she makes $15 an hour, and she and her friend live in their car. So just because they're not here on the streets of Santa Cruz, they're living in their car in San Jose and in other towns, making money for the city, for this city. But they're not getting even enough to support themselves. But I think we could hire a third of the people, have them actually work, and pay them three times as much.
Perhaps you would like to run for the city manager position?
No. No, I'm going on vacation.
How about walking for the city manager?
Well, you know, I'm going on
vacation. Crawling.
I'll be what do they call it? A consultant.
A consultant?
I'll be a consultant.
A highly paid consultant, yes. So, Robin asked me this question earlier. He said, where are people going who are being forced out of the benchlands? Do you have any sense of this?
We've seen people go along the back of the levee, and then the cops go and harass them and ticket them. We saw, you know, people had set up their little tent right in back of some of those closed down businesses on Front Street. And we saw four or five cops back there the other morning just ticketing everybody along the thing. Of course, the tickets are actually, this is the paradox too, is you think you're going to owe money on the ticket, but really it's money coming to the people. This is the...
Is this more of your hotel paradox nonsense?
Paradox is coming. The meek inherit the earth, and this whole crew of the underground will rise. So all those tickets are actually money for them.
The meek inherit the dirt is what I always heard.
Oh, no, they're going to get hooked up. So all those tickets were actually God's way of paying it forward, and they don't know what's coming.
You tell him to talk to me. I need a full interview on the subject.
It's perfect. I mean, you've got their name. You can easily pay the people out. Every ticket they had written, they get the price of that ticket that they would have had to pay. Because they had to be harassed for a ticket. So harassment was somebody with a gun with your intent to be robbed. That's what a ticket is. We're robbing you. And if you don't pay, we're going to put you in jail. You know, that's a robbery. So that's why the police department shuts down. The only one that will stay is the fire department because they have a righteous motive. It's all about motive. Just like the bar downtown, we have all the clues right here in Santa Cruz. Catalyst, motive, right?
Have you heard of many people moving to the Poganip?
Yes, people have gone up to the Poganips. There are people back in the doorways downtown. People have gone back out to the beach. But there's a lot of the crew that are steadfast and la resistance, and they are not moving. So
now, are you one of those infidels?
Well, I'm not over there at the benchland.
And actually, I've not heard of anyone who actually sat in place and refused to move in terms of their possessions and property and said, I'm protected by Martin versus Boise. You haven't given me adequate notice. The accommodations you're proposing are not adequate for my needs, and they aren't inadequate for the needs of the community around me. Therefore, I'm not moving. If you need to arrest me, go ahead. And that has not happened, although... that happened, I don't even know if that happened back in December of 2020 when there was massive community support for resisting the police attempt under the former police chief. I think that the community came out and resisted, but I'm not aware that people in their tents resisted. A very few. And I haven't heard of anyone resisting this time, perhaps because of the clever strategy that the city mangler has of providing a kind of temporary but illusory safety valve to let off the steam and pressure so that people can retreat deeper into the benchlands. But of course, as the benchlands get sliced off, that area becomes smaller and smaller, more and more densely packed, and eventually disappears. So it's quite an effective strategy. Will people in the next segments beyond the footbridge, between the footbridge and Soquel, actually resist? I don't know. I have my doubts, given what's happened previously, though others are more militant or optimistic about it. Certainly, community has not shown up in any numbers to support them. There are people who come and document, people like me who come and sign people up for possible future lawsuits or possible future community connections so there can be some kind of organization that tries to stop these sweeps in the days ahead, but not a lot of people, and certainly not the numbers, show up as they did back in December of 2020 and successfully resist, and certainly no union of the homeless lawsuit seems to be forthcoming at the moment, and you have to say just isn't forthcoming. Because if it hasn't happened up to now, why would we assume it's going to happen ever? As I said, there are some independent individuals who are trying to coach homeless people on how to deal with their own lawsuits, but pretty much a lot of them are busy just finding places to hide, places to protect what little they can of their goods, so forth.
But I am rooting for them because they're all going into the paradox.
You see more people here at the Food Not Bombs meal.
From the bench land?
Oh, just generally.
Oh, yeah. This is a great community gathering.
More than a year ago.
People have all become family out here because we've been, you know, when you're in crisis together, you have a different kind of bond than you do just with a coworker or friends from a club or something because, you know, you're helping each other during crisis. And there's a holy crew out here. They might be disheveled and tore up, but I'm telling you, they're holy people.
Any violence against homeless folks you've heard about?
I've heard, but I don't know if that's true or if it's propaganda to try and put fear into the homeless people, thinking that they need the police to protect them. I really am not sure that those stories were actually true.
Have any of your friends been hurt?
No, they just beat each other up.
I see.
They're man dogs. They love it. They love to fight. I have learned so much about men from being out here with these guys for all these years. They play war games. They love battles. They love to fight. They fight with each other, and then they make up. They love each other. So it's just
how are women being treated?
The women are tore back. We need help. There's no shelters for women. There's no safe place for women. The only domestic violence shelter is 6 beds for women with children, and that's been the same now for 20 years. Nothing has been done in this city to provide any kind of safety for women. We have women out here getting roped into housing for sex, or raped, or robbed, and it goes on every day.
Anything happened in the last week you've heard about?
I mean, it goes on every day. There are more women living inside in domestic violence situations in Santa Cruz because there's nowhere else for them to go.
How about
out here to the street? And unless you're seasoned like us, most people, this is like the worst
alternative.
Alternative, right. So they'll stay in a violent situation indoors because...